from the Comedy Palace, please welcome, straight from the Howard Stern Show, the one and only Jackie the Joke Man Motley.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to PMP Network. We have with us the Joke Man himself, the funniest guy in the world. Here he is, Jackie the Joke Man Martin.
Now, I would like to start over, and I would like you to give me a decent introduction. Not the funniest man in the world is not, I don't think that quite does me justice.
Hey, what do you think you are, the funniest in the universe?
No, I don't think I'm anywhere near the funniest guy in the world. I like to think that I tell a good joke.
I think you did
that. But thanks for pulling on my penis, Mark, and I don't know what the... What are our guidelines as far
There is no guidelines.
Stop being an asshole.
Say whatever you like. Just like you do on the CD, F. Martling. F. Martling.
F. Martling.
You can tell it's one of those nights with no sleep.
Yeah.
F. Jackie, of course, is the name of the CD, and it's as usual, very, very funny. I have all your CDs now.
Groovy.
And even that little box that gives me jokes during the day and keeps me going.
How funny is that?
That is great. That's a great invention, by the way.
As long as you're giving me a nice pump like that, all my products are available from jokeland.com or from 1-800-323-5464. That joke in the box he's talking about is a little box, and you press the nose, it tells one joke. One joke at a time. It's kind of like potato chips, right? You keep hitting it?
Yeah, you can't just listen to just one.
So it's great fun. And you actually listen to my CD. I love it when an interviewer actually listens to the CD.
The whole thing. I listened to it twice, as a matter of fact.
Filthy, isn't it?
Well, you know, some of the jokes are it's funny because the audience will go, ooh, you know, some of the jokes, but I think they're hilarious.
It was just such a good crowd. I was just on fire that night. You know?
And that's the Comedy Palace in the Andover, right?
Yeah, and I'm going back there... December 8th and 9th, and I actually got to promote it, of all places, on Hollywood Squares.
There you go.
Tom Bergeron said he was getting such a kick out of, he never promoted anything named F something before. So every time he had to say, all right, Jackie the Joke Man to block, he has a new CD, F Jackie, and every time he said it, he kind of giggled. And well, that day they're airing that Sweeps Week. How exciting is that? I'm on Hollywood Squares Sweeps Week. Well, how the fuck did I wind up on Hollywood Squares?
I don't know, but I do know that with this interview, when we put it up on the site, we are going to put that up on it. Hollywood Squares will have a link to your website and also your 800 number.
Oh, now you are a nice guy.
Well, I know that.
Okay, now continue to fry me in this interview.
No, I don't. No, I'm not into that.
I'm not politically astute.
I'm not going to fry you in the interview at all, because I just I happen to admire your work, and I think it's interesting, though, the dynamics on that show that we're talking about, the Howard Stern Show, of course.
Uh-huh.
But before I even talk about that, tell me a little bit about where you grew up and how you got into comedy and all this kind of stuff.
To make it quick as possible, I was born in 1948 on Long Island, and my father and his brother married two sisters, and my father inherited the house. He bought it from his brothers and sisters. So my father and my mother lived on the first floor, and my aunt and my uncle, which were their brother and sister, lived on the second floor, and I was the first child. So when I was born, I immediately had four doting parents. And a couple of years later, all of a sudden they had kids, my parents had other kids, everybody started drinking. And I think I spent the last 50 years saying, where did everybody go?
Really?
That's my theory on what made me whatever it is that I am.
Do you find that most people who are in comedy had kind of some kind of dysfunctional growing up?
I find that most people that you meet had some kind of dysfunctional growing up. You know, and it's all relative. You know, like one of my stock answers, people say, did you have a happy childhood? And I always say, how can you answer that? I have nothing to gauge that on. The only person I can compare it to is myself. Mm-hmm. And compared to me, it was about the same.
See, I had a very idyllic childhood with two parents that were there all the time and taking me to the Red Sox games and, you know, the whole deal. It was a very very nice childhood, and I didn't appreciate it as much until I grew up and talked to people who didn't have that kind of childhood.
Now, see, Mark, I thought I had that too. You know, my kindergarten report card, what a cheery kid, it's a delight to have him. My father took us to the World Series games, and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, as it grew later in life, you know, he started to drink more, but he wasn't any kind of abusive person or anything like that. And I think that you've pretty well carved in stone the way you're going to be long before you're like five. You know what I mean? So I think my parents were happy, and I was happy, and everything was fairly rosy while I was being made into whatever. Do you know what I mean? But then you get to a therapist who says, no, you know, you came from an alcoholic household, you're a mess. And I'm like, well, you know, they think that you're shielding yourself, and how the hell can you compare it? You can't compare yourself to your own brothers and sisters because they're younger, so the family is completely changed by the time they're going through the same formative period, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, who the hell knows?
Now, when did you realize that you, I mean, when I was a kid, I was always the class clown. Were you the class clown, too?
You know, it's funny. People used to ask me if I was a class clown, and I used to say no, because in my mind, that was almost like a badge, like a good thing, and I wouldn't lay claim to it myself. And then I realized, Jackie, you were flipping the bird in eighth grade in your class photo. If that doesn't stamp me class clown, you see, it's been a long time since I have LPs out. I should have sent you a copy of my first LP. The cover of my first LP that I put out in 1979, it was called What Did You Expect? The purpose being, what did you expect from a kid who was given the bird? And the front of the LP, the cover of the LP, is my 8th grade class picture where I'm unmistakably sitting there giving the finger. In fact, that exact picture is on the disc of F. Jackie.
Uh-huh.
You know that the little guy sitting there giving the finger?
Oh, yeah,
that's me
is,
in 8th grade.
Yep. Oh, that's funny. You know, it's interesting. When I was going to school, I used to do impressions, and one of them was of the principal. And I ended up getting a job in the library working in the audiovisual squad. You know what kind of nerds those guys are.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up, I would put the speaker on to the school and speak like the principal.
That's classic ball breaking.
And boy, oh boy, they didn't know who was either was doing it. And then when he would talk, I would actually click on the microphone so that you could hear clicking noises while he was talking, and he could never figure out what happened.
Oh, I mean, we did stuff like we used to hum when the homeroom teacher was reading the what are they called? The announcements? What are they called? In the beginning of the day, the homeroom teacher has to read the announcements, and
right.
We used to count to three, and we'd all hum almost inaudibly, and she was like, you know, twitch her head, you know, it was, all kinds of shit like that. And then people say, you're a class clown. When I first started in comedy, I say, no, you know, not. And then I thought, wait, by process of elimination, who was it? You know, it wasn't Claude Dyson, you know.
Have you gone back to Vernon School in East Norwich?
It's funny, my parents' home, I don't know how much you listen to the show, but Howard's been breaking my chops about my parents' home, which I wanted to keep in the family, which is literally three blocks or not even three short blocks from that school. And I actually called it earlier in the year because the funniest thing about that stupid picture where I'm flipping the bird is the stupid zoot suit that I'm wearing, and that was not my suit. It belonged to a guy in the other eighth grade, and I actually had him come into the bathroom, you know, not forcibly, but I had him come into the bathroom and switch clothes with me so I could wear that stupid looking suit. And I was trying to chase down the other class's class picture to back up the story, because he's wearing the exact same suit, you know, and I just think that's very funny. But I left a few messages and nobody called me back, and I wonder if I'm like, I wonder if the James H. Vernon School, I'm kind of like Howard Stern is to Boston University, you know, like they disavow that I was ever there. I wonder if I went and looked at the class picture that's in their records, whether I'd, you know, my face would be crossed out, you know.
A little hole in the book there.
Exactly. Yeah, but the place is exactly the same as it was, you know.
I visited my high school about a month ago, and it was just amazing. You know, and also I went to an elementary school where I went to as well, and the biggest thing you find is the size of the water fountains, how short they are.
I went back to the Walnut Avenue School a long time ago, where I went to kindergarten through second grade, and I felt like I was Paul Bunyan.
Yeah.
I mean, everything, you know, the water fountains up to your knees, the little tiny, tiny desks, it just... such a rush going back there. I went back to my college homecoming last year, and we actually, all the guys from my band met, and we played downstairs in the grill where we used to play rock and roll in the 60s, and I'm just looking at the people dancing, and it's our old, not groupies, but friends of the band, they were all there, and there were all these old, fat, gray people. I'm like, wow, you know, what are they doing there? And then I realized I was one of them. You know, somebody took a picture of the band, and here's these four old decrepit men holding guitars and drums. You know, it's hysterical.
It is kind of funny when you see these kind of things, and especially like the old homecoming queens and stuff. Most of them don't look too good.
Ooh.
But
and you know what the funniest thing is you look at everybody, and they look old, but when I look in the mirror, I'm still seeing that college sophomore. I'm not seeing their equivalently old person.
Exactly. Well, I think that all of us do that. And in fact, we see something completely different than everybody else sees.
Of course.
which is better, actually.
Oh, a lot better. You know, when Howard starts screaming that I look old and wrinkly, I'm like, you're out of your mind. And I go home and look in the mirror and go, whoa.
Well, yeah, you mentioned him again, so let's talk a little bit about Howard and the show. And obviously, Jackie the Joke Man has got a big boost from the show. And I also have been reading your stuff in, was it Penthouse that you're in, right?
Uh-huh.
When did you start collecting jokes? When did you get into jokes as kind of
you know,
life?
It's kind of fuzzy, of course. And in the course of, I started doing comedy in 1979 when I totally abandoned music because I had been at it 10 years for apparently no reason whatsoever. And when I started in comedy, I didn't just say, hey, let me go find some jokes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was already equipped. I mean, I'd been telling dirty jokes to everybody I knew and strangers and anybody I ran into since I could remember, and had always told them, always enjoyed making people laugh. So I just tried, you know, doing a little, I had told jokes in my bands on stage also, so I just figured I'd give the jokes a chance on stage while I tried to figure out what the hell I'd do with my life after I got out of music. And I've never had to rethink it because it worked, you know, and no thought went into it. But the more you get interviewed as you're a comedian, you got to, you know, were you the class clown? Where do you get inspired to do jokes? You got to go back in your mind and find these answers because they keep getting asked. And I can remember being in like third grade, and when you come from a small town and you got like a group of 5 or 10 guys, everybody's different ages. Like I was in third grade, somebody was in second grade, somebody was in fifth grade. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. there's not that many guys. And my cousin was in eighth grade, which if you're in third grade is, you know, he's Methuselah.
Yeah.
And he came walking into this house where we were all sitting around, and he took a piece of paper out and read the old parody to The Night Before Christmas, which has been passed around forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was The Night Before Christmas all through the house. Everybody in the family was drunk as a louse, and it proceeded on and on. Okay. And all the guys sat there spellbound as he read this and that, you know, and laughing. And I think in the back of my mind, it was like, wow, that's cool, you know, or whatever the equivalent word would have been in third grade. That's neat. He's, you know, listen to him. You know, they admire him. They're laughing. They like it. And I think after that, I know I used to buy, you know, when everybody else was buying C-Spot Run books, I was getting the joke books when you chose the books, when they pass around the list of the books that you can buy.
Right.
And I remember I did a Cub Scout dinner. They asked me to host a Cub Scout blue and gold dinner, and I actually took a joke from Boy's Life and switched it to be my scoutmaster. And I said, yeah, Mr. Bot, I had a dream last night that Mr. Bot jumped out of an airplane, and he pulled the ripcord to his parachute, and his pajama bottoms fell down. And I remember the people laughing, you know, and I know at some point in college I said, Jesus Christ, I have to write down these jokes because I'm going to start forgetting them because there's just so many millions. And then, of course, years later, you know, I wound up in this band, this two-man band, and we were collecting jokes. And then at one point I just gave them categories and names, and then it just grew. Like, I'm sorry it's such a long answer, but it was so gradual, you know?
Well, you did the part of your act was the Stump the Joke Man, which, you know, people had to give you the punchlines or the beginnings?
Well,
the
reason I started doing that, it's funny, before I was even with Howard, there was a guy in comedy on Long Island who used to say, you know, name a performer and I'll play one of his songs. And it was funny. And I used to say, give me a subject and I'll give you a joke. Because I had seen, I don't know if you saw it on the webpage, the genesis of Stump the Joke Man, I saw Maury Amsterdam on the Carson show. And as you get older in show business, you realize that everything you ever see is completely set up, always, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Maury Amsterdam was there, and Johnny Carson says, so Maury, they say you can tell a joke on any subject. And he says, yeah. And Johnny said, birds. And Maury Amsterdam said, why does a hummingbird hum? And Carson said, why? He said, because he doesn't know the words. And that was all it took. I said, holy Christ, look at that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He knows a joke about everything. And of course, backstage, I'm sure Maury Amsterdam said, ask me birds,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it must have locked into my mind that I wanted to be able to really do that. So when I'd ask people for a subject, they'd give me a subject, but you'd open up the umbrella. Like if somebody said lettuce, I'd say, okay, all right, lettuce, sandwiches. You know what I mean? You kind of open the window a little.
Right.
And I got so I could do that because anybody could go up and tell jokes for an hour, which is my act, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tell them well, et cetera, et cetera. But when you turn it around and say, all right, now you give me the setup of a joke, and I'll tell you the answer, that then it starts to show your true knowledge. I mean, it's a dumb calling, but I do know these goddamn jokes, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's such a no-lose proposition, Mark. It's like it's like shooting rats in a trap because people ask me, I do two-line jokes, yeah. And they ask me a joke, and I know the answer, and the crowd goes nuts, as I know everyone. But then when somebody stumps me, they go twice as nuts. Mm-hmm. So I can't lose, you know?
That's true. You know, it's interesting talking about going nuts and about losers. The big losers on your CD are the guys who or women who taunt you. You are great at putting down these hecklers.
You know, it's so funny. I did a show in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago. It was 1,000 people, and I don't know whether I'm getting more famous or what's going on or my audience is getting older or maybe the shows are so expensive that people are getting more polite. But you could have heard a pin drop in this audience for an hour. Mm. But, of course, I've got all these heckler lines, you know.
Yeah.
And towards the end of the show, some poor bastard on the side, and it was so innocent. I said, like, why did chicken cross the road? And I think he, like, said, why? You know what I mean? Uh-huh. It was no kind of a heckle.
Right.
And I turned, and I hit him with about five, but shots right between the eyes, you know. And he's, like, standing there, like, shell-shocked, and the crowd's roaring. And I got done. I said, sorry, pal, you know. I had those in the chamber, and the show's almost over. I had to fuck with somebody, you know. But, you know, yeah, that's fun, you know.
Now, how much of this stuff do you actually make up, and how much of it do you hear from others and incorporate?
Most of my act is just the classic jokes, you know. I mean, except when I'm talking about my wife, or it's an obvious routine, or you know, one-liners, or stuff that carries the act along, you know, the heckler stuff like that. But the jokes as far as, you know, a black guy and a Jew are sitting in a bar, those are just jokes that have come down through time that have been around, you know, like the jokes about women that are told about Dolly Parton and then get told about Madonna. We're told about Catherine the Great. You know, sex right. And crap and piss and farts have been around. Everything. The more you go into the joke business, the more you see that there's nothing new under the sun. We used to have discussions at the comic strip in Florida when it was one of the first road gigs that ever existed back in the early 80s. And none of the comics that I ever talked to claimed to have ever written or even ever met anybody who ever claimed to have ever written any of the classic billions of jokes that, you know, Dirty Johnny did this or Three Indians did that. Or, I mean, there's jokes that have been around since, you know, there's jokes. People come up and tell me jokes all the time, and I say, you know, I heard that in 1958, and they say, that's impossible. You know, I'm like, no, it isn't. You know, Red Fox used to say in his act, he used to look at a lady in the audience, he'd say, don't look at me, ladies, somebody got to tell him. You know what I mean? It's like these things have been passed along and passed along. Red Fox did them on vinyl, and now I'm the guy who's doing them on CD, you know?
Well, there's been a number of books in the past, you know, Dirty Jokes, Very Dirty Jokes, More Dirty Jokes.
Right, of course.
And this is the audio equivalent.
Right. I like to think it's the creme de la creme. It's the... You know, people say, oh, you just tell jokes on stage. I say, listen, help yourself. Take any jokes you want and go up on stage and try and make an act out of it. Trust me, it's not an easy sell. I've seen really good comedians go up there and tell a joke, and it's something I've been doing. It's innate. I've been doing it since I was, like, you know, 8 years old. And you get so I can read through a joke book. And it sounds like I'm bragging. I'm not really bragging, but... you get so you know what you can make work from the stage. Mm. You know, if I handed somebody a joke book and said, you know, pick out the ones you think can work on stage and go up and tell them, it there's more to it. It seems effortless, but there's a little bit more to it. You know, I guess I'm giving myself a little too much credit because, you know, a dick joke is a dick joke, but, you know.
But there's a lot more to it because I've done comedy myself, and I've been on stage, and it's a very unique and very scary experience.
You know how quiet it can get, how quick.
Yeah, and when it's quiet, it is scary.
It's deafening, isn't it?
Ugh.
I used to do that to people. I used to say, you know, people ask me what it's like when you bomb a joke. And then I'd pause and let it get real quiet for a second. Because I had an analogy of bombing a joke was kind of like the same feeling that you get when you go to sit down on the toilet and you forget to put the rim down. You know, and you go flying into the bowl. It's like, I'm an asshole! Yeah. You know, it's like it's a very... horrible, horrible feeling.
Yes, I know that personally. It's not a good feeling, and it's a much better feeling to have people laughing hysterically, and it gives you an adrenaline rush.
Right. It works. It feeds on itself the same way bombing feeds on itself. Mm. I'll tell you, one of the highlights of my life as an entertainer was the first time I ever saw the phrase flop sweat coined. Because when I saw that, I said...
It's perfect.
I said, that's so great, because that means that other people have experienced this. Because before you see that phrase, I always thought it was God's way of telling me, get out of show business. You know, because it's such a horrible, horrible feeling. It's like, what are you doing on stage? You don't belong on stage. Look how nervous and uptight and bad you are, and no one's laughing. And then you find out that everybody's been there. It's like, you know, that's why I hate when people criticize performers that have never performed. Because it's like, unless you've been up there and bit it, you know, you can't realize it takes balls to go up there and be crappy.
Yeah, there's another kind of flop sweat too that's underneath Dolly Parton's breast.
There you go.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about F. Jackie, because not just about the CD, but the expression. I know that came from Miss America, the Stern book.
Right.
It said "fuck Jackie." It was actually a chapter in the book.
Yeah. Well, the chapter had stuff on me and a couple of the other guys, and the first two words in the chapter were "fuck Jackie."
Mm-hmm.
And a while after the book came out, some listener called up and said, Howard, I liked your book, and I agree with you. And he said, F Jackie. And all of a sudden, there it was. There was a way of saying fuck Jackie
mm-hmm.
without saying it. And I think it was like the next caller or a couple of callers later, somebody called about something completely different. And then before he hung up, he said, and by the way, I agree, F Jackie. Mm-hmm. And that's all it took. And it caught on. And then all of a sudden, you know, people have been saying it and saying it and saying it. And now calling the CD that is just so much fun, because now every time somebody signs off on the phone with F. Jackie, it's like, thank you.
Exactly. That's ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. But, you know, did it bother you at all?
No, because I've never taken offense. I didn't take offense when Howard wrote it, because Howard wrote it and then said incredibly nice things about me, and then took another shot at me and then said nice things. You know, maybe I have a lot of hard bark in me, maybe I'm blind, but I think a real lot of people that say it don't even realize, you know, I think it's more of a term of endearment. You know what I mean?
I think a lot of it is, too. I've always felt that way anyway. But they do give you quite a lot of shit, though, and sometimes it must...
you're talking about the size of the F. Jackie thing. Oh, yeah, they, you know. They're constantly up my ass.
Yeah, I mean, does it sometimes get to you? I mean, that you really do get mad enough. I know I've heard guys on the show say, I'm this is it, I'm out of here.
Well,
but no one ever quits.
You know what it is? I guess on some level it bothers you a little bit, but the truth of it is, you better let it bother you a little bit, because if you just sit there and laugh and it doesn't get to you, they're going to keep going.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like if the town bully's beating you up, at some point you got to say, ouch, and fall down, or he's going to kill you.
Right.
You know, so the truth of it is, you know, some of the horrible things that Howard says to me, I wrote, you know, so people say, what? You know, or else he'll pick on me, and then we'll move on to something else, and I'll write a note that calls back on it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of the game, you know, and yeah, sometimes it makes you a little nuts, and like you sit there and go, what kind of a job have I got? But, you know, the people love to come in and pile on me, because when Howard's picking on them, I'm writing things, you know, so many times Gary has been walking out of the room, you know, after coming in and doing something, and I'll just go, which will key Howard in and just taking off on him for, you know.
A baba booey.
Yeah, so so they know that I got a poison pen and I do a lot of damage to everybody. So even though it doesn't sound like it's coming from me, they'd love to come in and get even, you know.
In real life, aside from being in the studio, how do you get along with folks like Robin and Howard and all the folks?
That's my most frequently asked question, and the truth is very well. Very, very well. I mean, we're pals. I mean, it would freak people out after a world war. We go to commercial, and, you know, somebody will say, hey, you know, what are you doing later? You know, I mean, it's you know, when the camera stopped, Mo didn't keep poking Curly in the eye, you know?
Right. Yeah, I figured that you guys would, because you can't really work together like that if you don't like each other somewhat. You know, each other.
You know, when I walked in there for the first time in 1983, Fred, Robin, and Howard were sitting there. When I walked in there this morning, Fred, Robin, and Howard were sitting there. That was 17 years ago.
Right.
5 hours a day, 5 days a week, since 86, actually. I've been steady there for, you know, 14 or 15 years.
Right.
But that's a lot of time. That's a lot of time to spend with people you don't like. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Exactly. And the other thing I wanted to touch on, too, you mentioned earlier your wife, Nancy, who looks to me like has a large part in your own career in terms of I know her name's a lot on a lot of different things that you're doing. And
well,
and of course, she's also got her own thing, the Scoldies, which are an excellent band.
They just got the distribution with Electronic Kingdom, and their CD's been played, I guess, on like about 100 stations. You know, some come and some go.
Including PNP Network.
Yeah, and I appreciate how good you've been to them. But they're great, you know, and she's, you know, besides being beautiful, she's very talented, and she came to work with me in 1981, and we tried to keep our hands off each other because you can't work and, you know, and play, but, you know, she's a cute girl, and what the hell can you do? You know, she's smart and fun and creative, and, you know, why the hell look further? So we fell in love and produced, and she managed my, you know, my act for a bunch of years, and then the Howard thing came out of the grace of God during the middle of that, and she's worked as an actress, and then she started writing these songs and got this band together. They're working on their second album now, and she's just doing fantastic. And, you know, and of course the exposure from the Stern Show isn't the greatest thing because it makes people think twice about taking her music seriously, but once they, you know, if it gets it into their hands, that's fine, because once people hear it, you know, that, you know, that's not the Howard Stern Show. That's her music on there, and it's good.
It's very good.
You know.
It's very good. It stands all by itself, but it certainly helps to have the initial publicity push that the Stern Show provides.
Right. Well, it can be a double-edged sword, but, yeah, for the most part.
Mm. Now, F. Jackie is available at jokeland.com and also through the 800 number we're going to put on the website as well.
Yep, it's 1-800-323-5464. F. Jackie plus my first four CDs, plus the Joke in the Box, the Stump the Joke Man video, our whole catalog is available, and you can get a free catalog by going to jokeland.com, or you know, and you can, if you don't have a credit card, it explains how to do it mail order with a check or a money order. The most important thing, Mark, is there's MP3 files of all the CDs right there on jokeland.com. Right off the front page, you can go to a page full of MP3s from F. Jackie. I tell people, go there and play three of the jokes, play five of the jokes. It's all individual jokes on the files. And after five or ten jokes, you know, if you're not laughing, then I'm not for you. But if you're howling and you're saying, holy Christ, I'd love to hear a CD full of this crap to listen to while I'm driving along, or, you know, or while I'm having a few beers on a Friday afternoon, then buy a CD. It's that simple. You know, you can sample it before you buy it.
I think it's great stuff, but I think it's also a good test of women, as were the Three Stooges. Because
with a woman and she's laughing at that stuff, she's got a good sense of humor.
She's good quality. Because a lot of these women, they don't want to hear anything about Stern, and they don't want to hear the stuff you're doing because it's too dirty.
Right.
So,
it's a little controversial, but, you know, if nobody gets hit between the eyes, it's not comedy.
I agree with that, especially in your act. You verbally barrage them, that's for sure.
Right, and you got to stick with it to hear, you know, I get it, and Nancy gets it, and the fat people get it, and the blacks get it, and the Jews get it, and the, you know, and everybody, you know, you'll always get a midget that comes up and says, hey, I don't like the midget jokes. Yeah, but you laughed at the black jokes.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Opportunity harassment.
Exactly.
Well, Jackie Martling, thanks so much for joining us at PNP Network. And
I got one more plug.
Okay.
My dial joke has been going for over 20 years. And I got F. Jackie is also on my dial joke. It's free. It doesn't cost a call except for the price of the call. And it's 516-922-WINE. And I know I passed out bumper stickers in Massachusetts 20 years ago. So anybody around the country, I have people all the time come up and say, hey, are you the guy that used to have the joke line? And I say, no, I'm the guy that still has the joke line that's been going since 1979. It's 516-922-9463. And call up and listen to some of F. Jackie. If you don't have a computer, there's your samples right there.
And also you'll be on the Hollywood Squares coming up.
Yep, that's November 27th to December 1st, which is Sweeps Week. And for you people in Boston, Andover, Massachusetts, December 8th and 9th. And, I don't know how quick this will be on the web, but Stamford, Thursday night. It's funny, I'm at the Palace in Stamford and the Comedy Palace in Andover. I guess I'm like a palace-type guy.
I think you're the Prince of Comedy.
Okay, so
all right.
So November 16th, which is a Thursday night in Stamford at the Palace.
And if you do want to send one of those LPs, I'd love to listen to it.
Oh, I'll send you a cassette of it, and I'll send you, I think I got a copy of, I only got like two copies of it, but I think I got a bunch of copies of the cover.
Okay.
But I got to send it up to you because you'll get a kick out of it. I mean,
cool.
It's old and funky and black and white and, you know, with filthy song titles on the back that had nothing to do with what's on the album. you know.
And, you know, talking about song titles, are you going to do any, you know, you always wanted to do music. You spent 10 years trying to do it. Now that you're established, people know who you are, is it maybe time to put together something and get it out on CD?
Well, you know, it's funny because this guy told me that I did this movie, and he said he was trying to get the rights to Jimmy Buffett's Let's Get Drunk and Screw. And I said, no, you'll never get the rights. It'll cost you a fortune. He said, well, you could do it. And I said, even if I do it, the rights will cost you a fortune. I said, listen, I got songs. And he listened, and he loved Fool's Gold. I don't know if you listened to the show enough, but Another Glass of Fool's Gold is a beer-drinking song of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if you'll put it in the movie, I'll go recut it. So I went and recut it, which that's also on jokeland.com. You can go there and hear Fool's Gold, the redone version, with one of the greatest guitar players in the world, Arlen Roth, produced by my old friend Kevin Kelly. It's a great beer-drinking country song. And it's in the beginning of this movie that's coming out on DVD called Rules for Men. I put it on my CD Come Again that came out last year. And now I just did this movie Potluck, which is an actual movie. It's going to come out next June with Tommy Chong, Jason Isaacs, who was the bad guy in The Patriot,
mm-hmm.
Sylvia Miles, Frank Gorshin, David Peel, and I'm a bar owner. And in my scenes, that's my song Fool's Gold is going to be playing in the background. So now I'm making goddamn soundtracks. So yeah, it actually does give me the bug to go back in. But I tell you, music's weird. It's like going to dial the phone number of an old girlfriend to give it one more try. And in the back of my mind, it's like, you know, Jackie, this didn't work. You know, why would you put your balls out there again to get slammed with a sledgehammer again? You know. But now I got the money to actually do it. You know, without asking anybody. So it is tempting.
Why not? And you know something? You only have one life. You might as well live it to the live your dreams.
Oh, yeah. To this day, when Howard plays Fool's Gold, or he's played snippets of a lot of my songs on the radio, and as much as they make fun of him, I'm as stupid as they are, I'm proud of them. You know, because I always tell people, you don't have to produce good art for it to be hard work and heartfelt. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, you got to really break your balls to produce something that sucks. You know?
That's true.
And you can put out something great also that isn't commercially successful. So, I mean, it's a, you know how hard the road is, man. It's a tough one. I consider myself so, so lucky. And I appreciate Howard and the Stern Show. I mean, goddamn, there's a lot of talented people out there that are working their balls off to make a living. And I'm very comfortable. And I'm knocking on wood as I'm talking to you.
Mm. How long do you think this whole thing will last? You anticipate for being on there for years and years and years?
Yeah, people asked. In 1987, people were saying, wow, you guys are on in Philadelphia, and you're great now, syndicated to Philadelphia. It's so good, but how long can it last? And I'll be goddamned if Howard doesn't just keep reinventing himself and folding it back over. You know, he got us a TV show, and then another TV show, and then he wrote the books, and then made the movies and the pay-per-views. And you know, I just got off work, and I'm telling you, the show today was as fresh as it was in 1986. It's just funny and fun and biting and scathing and silly and stupid. It's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we'll be around for years and years until he says, you know, I'm tired.
He's always threatening to do that. I hope he doesn't.
But he's been threatening since 1986. You know, tomorrow's my last day. You know,
isn't his contract up this year?
Yeah, but his contract's been up a lot of times.
Yeah.
You know what? I honestly have no idea what he's going to do. But I hope, I hope come January 1st that me and you are doing another interview and another CD.
I hope so, too. And good luck with F. Jackie, Jackie.
Thanks. Everybody go out and buy a copy of F. Jackie. It's the simplest possible Christmas present to wrap.
There you go. And it's easy to do. And give it to your grandma. She'll love it.
There you go.
There you go.
Mark, thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.